Good morning, everyone. I apologize. I had for our late start on a late starting meeting. I was in Washington today with leading our presentation to a national board for the Race to the Top dollars. And you'll be glad to know that Team Maryland acquitted itself very well. Yes. Dr. Bill Height from Prince George's County gets my award for being the most valuable player on the Q&A portion of the presentation. Governor Chris and the Floridians were following us to heaven. No competition there. So anyway, we did very well telling the story of the people of our state, which is really remarkable when you consider our public school system in the toughest of time has been named 2 years in a row the best public school system in America, and the strides that are being made in Prince George's and Baltimore City. We are now a majority-minority public school system as a state, and yet have our children taking more AP courses than in any other state in the country, and succeeding and doing very well in the face of the toughest of times. So I was about the people's business, and otherwise I would have been here on time. Any opening thoughts or comments?
I'd like to compliment the state on its education reform. I think that's terrific, and I also want to reach out and congratulate our colleague, the treasurer, on her election to the National Association of Auditors and Comptrollers and Treasurers. And
a mouthful.
I don't remember voting for her, but I would have. Someone else is in charge. Yeah. But I also want to just remind everyone that we're right in the middle of our tax-free Shop Maryland Week, where every item that clothing and shoes that cost less than $100 you can buy without the 6% sales tax. And families, I think, in the state are taking advantage of this opportunity for their back-to-school outfits, but I just want to remind everybody that there's a wide list of everything from fishing vests to football jerseys to, hesitate to say this, but diapers are also on the list, too. I guess they're a form of apparel. But the full list is on MarylandTaxes.com, the comptroller's website, and I'm sure everyone who's interested in this will get out and try to do some tax-free shopping. It's not a lot of money, perhaps, to some people, but every buck counts in this economic climate. Maryland families have had some tough years. This is a timely break, I think, for them, particularly those that are trying to get some back-to-school clothes. But it's a particular boon to Maryland retailers, who employ 20% of our private sector workforce. And last time the legislature did this was in 2001 for a full week, and we saw a 10% jump in retail sales. And so I hope that we get that kind of a boost this year and that we'll carry over into the fall shopping season. I visited a number of the areas of the state to promote this initiative, and I'm urging people to shop Maryland. You save money, but it also really boosts the morale of these businesses that need new, not just traffic, they need new shopping. And as we come out of the tough economy that we're in, I think we'll be led by the retail sales, and I encourage everyone to get out there and shop local, shop Maryland. Take advantage of the tax holiday. It runs through Saturday at midnight. And, Governor, I applaud you for supporting this initiative and also the legislature for passing it, and not only passing it for this year, but for every year in perpetuity. The second week in August will be a tax holiday, unless it gets overturned, which I hope it doesn't. But, yeah, definitely, shop Maryland. It's such a great state we have, so let's get out there and shop, shop, shop. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I recall that when it was first proposed and instituted, it was very controversial. And, in fact, as I recall, was an original proposal of the late Gene Cryer, Republican delegate from Montgomery County, who swayed everyone.
That was in 2001, but I think, actually, I recall Governor Schaefer being very involved in this. He was all upset with Ocean City and Delaware not having the tax, et cetera. And so I remember him pounding the
table
back in the 90s.
Good always to point out that Delaware, of course, has a value-added tax that is snuck into the price of something, and then they advertise that they have no sales tax. So our folks should remember when you're on the shore that, in fact, at least our taxes are open and transparent. Isn't that right, Comptroller?
Yes.
But I just thought it was interesting that some people criticize it on partisan grounds, but in fact it was a totally nonpartisan. You're right. It was the 2001. Governor, I don't have anything to say personally except thank you very much. I look forward to a year leading. I never thought I'd be in a position to lead auditors, comptrollers, and treasurers, and I don't think anyone does. But I was very honored, and I thank the people who have sent me their best wishes. We have a treat on our agenda later. I'm looking forward to very much a presentation on the Institute for Human Virology by Dr. Gallo and his colleagues. And I just want to thank everyone here for, especially those who don't know what a treat they have in store, for putting the time aside, because this is another one of the bright stars in Maryland's crown, and I look forward to hearing that.
Well, that's a good segue. Dr. Gallo, let's jump right into your presentation and come on up with any of your colleagues you choose. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having me here. And Nancy,
can I just say, Dr. Gallo, before you start, it was when the comptroller and I were in the legislature on the Appropriations Committee that Governor Glendening came with the great idea of trying to lure Bob Gallo and his colleagues from NIH to Maryland to create this great new Institute for Human Virology in Maryland. And it has been about a decade.
A little more now.
A little more now.
So and, it's about 13 years.
And the progress has been fantastic, and the work is wonderful, and so I thought it would be a good opportunity.
And like some other great things that Governor Glendening did, and he became Governor
of
Maryland responsible.
Keep it going.
Yes.
You took some of the only words I was going to say, because I was going to give you a surprise for the presentation, but I did want, well, first, thank you for the invitation, Treasurer Kopp, and Governor O'Malley, Controller Rancho, thank you for having me here. And I was going to mention some of that history, but now that it's done, I won't do it except to say thank you to the state and the beginning governor, the current governor. We have someone that's the administrative head of the Institute. Many of you have met here. We call him the Chief Operating Officer of the Institute, even though we're in an academic setting. And he's done a terrific, terrific job over these last many years, not at the very beginning. But for some time now, he told me that he's a fantastic speaker, and he never gets a chance. So he said he's really, really good at speaking, especially in total administrative matters, broad overview. So what could I do? He prepared the slides, and he said this is his moment. So Dave Wilkins is going to give the presentation.
Already you have a sense of my daily talent. Again, thank you, Governor O'Malley, Comptroller Francho, Treasurer Kopp, for inviting us. I was born and raised in Annapolis, product of Maryland public education. Went to West Annapolis Elementary School, Bates Junior High School, Annapolis High School. Anybody here from any of those schools? If I did anything in the elementary school to you, I apologize. Probably more likely some of you did something to me instead. I've really enjoyed this presentation because in my role, I don't actually do any of the things I'm about to tell you about. Other people do, so I get to brag about them and feel okay about that. But there's some really special things going on in Baltimore that you should be aware of, and we're really pleased that Treasurer Kopp's given us the opportunity to share them with you. 12 slides. We're going to talk about 7 things. It'll be very brief, 6 to 7 minutes, but I wanted to let you know what's happening in Baltimore. Go ahead to the next slide, please. Who are we? We have a team of 300 researchers, doctors, and staff, headed by Dr. Gallo, Dr. Blattner, and Dr. Redfield, who were recruited to the state 13 years ago to set up a world-class center of virology. And I think the success has been beyond anybody's expectations, as you'll see as we go through the presentation. Go ahead. Where are we? We're located in downtown Baltimore. We're part of the University of Maryland School of Medicine at the University of Maryland Baltimore. I see my friend Joe Evans here, who heads up procurement there. It's good to see a friend in the audience.
Dave, not to interrupt, but I think you ought to speak into the microphone.
Okay, I'd be happy to. Thank you.
Because there are folks watching on the Internet.
Okay. And we also are present and have big impact in Baltimore through our relationship with the University of Maryland Medical Center. And as you'll see in a few slides later on, we have a large impact all over the globe. That map just sort of gives you a picture of all the places we're involved. What do we do? Well, unfortunately, the lettering at the top of this slide is a little small, but we do five things. We do basic and vaccine research, viral oncology, which is searching for viruses that cause cancer. We work on animal models. We have clinical research, where we help patients. And we do epidemiology and prevention, which is studying the progress of disease for groundbreaking science, local presence, and global impact. Leading HIV and AIDS basic research, we have a very promising HIV vaccine candidate I'll tell you briefly about. We've received $300 million over the past 5 years through something called PEPFAR, which stands for the President's Emergency Program for AIDS Relief in Africa. It's one of the great things our country has done in the past century that very few people know about, and I'll tell you just a little bit about it in just a moment. We operate Maryland's largest African-American AIDS clinic in Baltimore. We've received patents on our technologies, which we're commercializing through a spinoff company. Okay. So the first of the seven things, basic science. Under Dr. Gallo's leadership, we have world-class scientific researchers in laboratories in our institute studying HIV, how it infects cells, how the cells respond, searching for viruses that cause cancer, and other viruses, hepatitis, HPV, Lassa fever. We get funding for these grants from the National Institutes of Health, the National Cancer Institute, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, so that the work that we're doing in science generates economy in Maryland, because we're getting these funds from outside the state to support the economy while we're doing our work. This is particularly exciting. The picture on the right is not anything to go into detail, but just to give you a sense of the details of the science that gets worked on. We have a very promising vaccine candidate for HIV, arguably the world's best in terms of how it has shown itself to be effective in the laboratory and in animal models. It's funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. The governor was gracious enough 3 years ago to host a press conference in this very room when we received our first $15 million award from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to develop this vaccine. We're actually going out there again in 2 weeks to meet with them, because we've submitted another $25 million proposal to develop it into clinical trials, because the first grant has been successful. It's always dangerous to talk about potential, but this is potentially the Gates Foundation's first HIV vaccine to go into clinical trials, and we're very excited about that. We have collaborators at the National Cancer Institute and the U.S. Army who are working on this with us. In addition to that, one of the early missions of the Institute was to commercialize technologies that were developed at the Institute for the good of the Maryland economy. Perfectus Biosciences is the spinoff company that was created 4 years ago. It now has a $12.5 million annual budget. It's located in East Baltimore and fulfilling the mission that IHV had. It's got contracts from Wyeth Pharmaceutical and from NIH, and is a thriving biotechnology pharmaceutical going concern in Baltimore. Okay. It's hard to argue what the most important thing is that we do, because so many of these things are critically important. This topic is the 5,500 HIV patients that we treat in Baltimore on an ongoing basis. As many of you know, Baltimore and Washington, D.C. have very difficult HIV/AIDS epidemics. The JOCS Initiative is a cutting-edge program that puts coaches to patients, coaches that work for us who have HIV, who help the patients understand how they need to take their medicine so that they'll be significantly treated. And the healthcare savings that are, and I don't think we've ever really measured this, but of the 90% of the patients who stay in the program and properly treated, the savings of that against if they weren't properly treated are dramatic, I think, to the Maryland economy. We do need to measure that someday, but we haven't yet.
A lot of this is direct observed therapy?
It is, direct observed therapy. You're exactly right. And what that means is that the patients come in and our staff watch them take their medication. If you have to take 21 pills a week for HIV and you take less than 19, the virus will mutate and your medication doesn't work anymore. I don't know about you, but I don't think I've ever taken 21 pills in a week successfully. And so for somebody who's down on their life to do that, it takes help. And that's the program that we put in place for coaches to help people
and
really stick to their medication. I'm sorry?
And it protects the general population.
That's right.
Because you don't want it mutated.
When you keep the virus in check, it protects the whole rest of the population, exactly. Next, please. The Greenbaum Cancer Center. Some of you may be aware that there's one of the nation's top cancer centers at the University of Maryland, Baltimore. It was recently designated a National Cancer Institute Cancer Center, which makes it one of the top centers in the country. It gets awards for developing that from NCI, and one of the key reasons it was chosen is because we partner with them with our viral oncology program. More and more cancers are being shown to be caused by viruses that people didn't see the connection to, and there's still many out there to pursue that these national funding agencies are interested in. So the Greenbaum Cancer Center was designated this National Cancer Center Award for one of the key reasons being its collaboration with IHV, and this is a real exciting future growth area for us. Again, how do you point a finger on the most important thing we do? Perhaps the vaccine as a future real global impact on HIV, but PEPFAR is certainly something we're very proud of as well. We have two major awards from this program, which again was the U.S. government's effort to improve the medical treatment access in Africa. And through Dr. Blattner, we have a $62 million a year program that's been developed in Nigeria. Through Dr. Bob Redfield has a $25 million a year grant in 9 countries in Africa and the Caribbean. And over the past 5 years since this program has been developed, we're now treating over 500,000 patients in these 9 countries. So I just think this is a great story of Maryland tax dollars that are being used to support the economy in Maryland, with the outgrowth being this work saving 500,000 lives in Africa that so few people know about. I'm personally proud to be a Maryland taxpayer supporting something like this. And I thank you to Nancy for giving us the opportunity to let you all know that this is going on, because I wonder how many people really know about this. But this is 10% through our institute in Baltimore of the entire U.S. effort to help people in Africa.
And as the governor pointed out, that the JAKES program helps not only the individuals with AIDS, but the entire community, obviously trying to stem the tide. And Africa helps the entire global community.
One of the interesting things about HIV is it permits other diseases to co-infect people. There's a tuberculosis epidemic raging in Africa now that was wiped out 20 years ago or so, that's reemerged because of HIV. And so you fight HIV and you fight so many other health impacts as well.
Well, I think actually this is one of the scariest pieces of news, because tuberculosis travels very easily.
Well, you want to make a comment, Dr. Gallo?
So, one comment. I don't want to give the impression that the Maryland taxpayers are paying for the Africa program. You scared me with that phrase. It's in life. So that comes completely from the PEPFAR. But you meant the origins of the institute. No, I think you covered things. I think you hit the highlights of the institute at the moment. And there's a lot of things that I don't think people here would be fundamentally interested in at this stage, which are basic science in cancer and in viral diseases with HIV at the top of the list. So
can I ask you what, Doctor, if you come to the mic, I know that so many of these things are subject to the trials, and there's a reason for doing the clinical trials, but what is the time frame we're looking at in terms of your very promising vaccine?
When Dave mentioned that we're going to Seattle this month, it is exactly to discuss where the application is, because we were requested to come in. I don't know of anybody else that's been asked. But Gates announced at the international meeting that he was, for the first time ever, confident that there would be a successful HIV preventive vaccine in the next 10 or 12 years or whatever it be, and that they would be making some announcements soon. So we try to think of where the competition is. I'm not sure we know where it is. We expect we will be selected. But, you know, we may be weeks away from being able to say that. We are weeks away from being able to say that. So if we're selected, what's next? It would be fairly rapid to go forward in clinical trials. The clinical trials would start in Maryland. And, you know, if it does, if Gates does not fund it for clinical trials, we'll have to re-strategize our go directly to some major pharmaceutical company. But I'm expecting they will. They put in $15 million already on the grant that I'm PI of, and we submitted this $25 million additional grant. And we keep getting statements like, you know, show us other buy-ins, because they're afraid to make this decision without a lot of national agreement. It's not like NIH can play this or that idea or maybe favor it. So the Army came in, Sanofi Pasteur came in with us, Profectus, the spin-off company. Am I forgetting one? I think of other people providing. Yeah, the National Cancer Institute. So Gates is not alone in funding this. The Army will be involved heavily. They have a virus, big virus program. Not a great deal of money, but they already told me this is their priority for collaboration. Sanofi Pasteur would provide significant financial input with reagents, things that you need to do for the vaccine. And NCI would do the clinical trials in Bethesda, and we'll do clinical trials in Baltimore at our institute. So, I mean, I hope we can say something right at the beginning of the fall that we announced that this is
as
funded.
As far as the next phase.
Well, that Gates funded this next bigger grant. We would certainly let all the people here, the right people here, know. And if that's true, they'll give us a time course for when the money comes and when the trials would begin.
Well, I tell you that your story and the work that you're doing makes all of us, I don't know, the proud is even the right word.
Oh, you said it many times.
We're hopeful, yeah. We're heartened, and we're glad to.
Thanks very much.
This is a partnership between, you know, the great people that you've been able to recruit, you and Dr. Redfield. To
remember, we came here naked from NIH. We didn't have a dime. And I thought, you know, the world.
Financially naked.
You know what I mean? You know, I felt, you know, red carpets are coming, and, you know,
it's a hot day then, too.
No, you know, you said you proved yourself with NIH and, you know, this and that and the other, so we'll just be all, you know, loving. But there is the dollar. People at the university, they're looking for work, you know, money. So, fortunately, things have gone in the right direction. I want to close with this, is that Dave mentioned some things, but we had a great board, currently chaired by, for the last several years, former Lieutenant Governor Kathleen Kennedy Townsend. And Nancy's been part of our advisory role from day one. So we've really been helped by the state, not in just the beginning financial and some basal support, which you can see there is not quite what it used to be, but it's not bad. But the total, you can see where we are now. But it's really been getting input and advice, and we know you're there. So,
Comptroller?
Yes, I just wanted to thank Dr. Gallo.
Thanks.
As the treasurer commented, she and I were both in the legislature when
That's
he
right.
came, and there were some,
yes.
If you recall, the legislative auditors, everybody
I made a mistake. That's right. Mr. Pencil was there, and there were some people that we had to have friends like you guys, or this wouldn't have happened.
But anyway, the fact of the matter is that many states would covet you and your lab and want you to be there. Other universities want you. The fact you're in here with us in Maryland is a source of pride. You've won several times the most prestigious award, the Albert Lasker Award in America. You should have gotten the Nobel Prize, and I hope you will get it in the future. And
I don't disagree with you.
Self-confidence.
I'll send you a paper that a Swede just published about all of this. It's interesting.
I did want to ask one question, because we're very interested, obviously, in the prosperity of our state down the road. We happen to think that a lot of these breakthrough laboratory discoveries are going to be commercialized. We'd like them commercialized in Maryland. And
right.
I noticed you have a startup company, but any thoughts that you have on how we can capture not just your discoveries, but what's going on at Hopkins and other institutions?
I think one of the things is to get the big pharmaceutical companies more aware of, and, you know, I do try to do this, and it's not my full-time job. But when I have an opportunity, I do talk. I mean, we had Merck visiting twice in the last few weeks, and I do talk about why aren't they here, or they give historical reasons. They don't get into taxes, but one wonders if that's part of it. But they generally give me the historical reasons. Well, that's where they are, et cetera. But I think working out a short and long-term strategy to bring pharmaceutical companies to have some larger representation in Maryland is probably a critical thing. When this is produced, where will it be produced? You didn't mention it. I think you were being maybe kind. You asked me, where do I, you know, would we be producing in Maryland? And Governor O'Malley has asked me that before.
How many times, Doc?
Oh, I think every time I see you. Well, what about production facilities? And you know, we're going to be not in the hands of Gates, because it's where more or less what we set up and want to do. But the struggle, as Dave reminds me, is Gates, I mean, yes, got a lot of billions of dollars, but they always want to do things as cheap as possible. So they're always, you know, looking to see, well, can you do better in Maryland? Because we can produce this over there in Wisconsin and bottle it over there in Carolina. And that's what our spinoff company, Profectus, has told us 5 minutes before his presentation, that they're being a little pushed in that direction. So we'll, when we're there on the 24th of August, we'll bring it up as strong as we can.
We'd like to push back.
Yeah, we'll push back. But then they're gonna want to talk to somebody
good
in the state.
And I want to talk to them, and they're not shy about calling when they want Maryland to weigh in on the congressional level on protecting innovation and investments in innovation. We're number two in the country in life science and biotech, only behind Massachusetts, according to Milken Institute.
Well, yeah, I can say something else that's not well known. In closing with this, I'm part of it, but it's not me, really. It's the fact that there's something called an impact factor, that the National Academy of Sciences commissioned a mathematician to look at how to evaluate work done and what it's led to by how many references, but also how many fields do you get those references, and how far out of the field, how long those references last. Four in the top ten are working in Baltimore.
That's great. Yeah. Well, we want in every way, you know, we do great on the research. We do great on, because of your leading work on unlocking these weapons of mass salvation, but we want to be in the production, and I appreciate any assistance you can give us on.
Well, I'm going to say you're putting me in a very awkward position to dictate where things have to be produced.
I know.
Something like that.
I know, that's true.
The last
you handle it so gracefully.
The last point we want to make is just a big thank you to everyone in the state government who supported us. As Dr. Gallo properly pointed out, that bottom little purple row you see there is the $3.5 million of state funding we receive through the university on an annual basis to support the entire institute. All of the PEPFAR work, which is the light blue part of the column, are grants that we receive from the federal government. So all of that pays for itself, but it's the base funding that supports the entire institute that everybody helps. And we just want to let you know what's happening with those funds that you've seen grown from $10 million in 97 to $116 million today, the 300 jobs that have been created from it. And we want to thank you for allowing us to do that and for your support and for letting us come here today and communicate some of this. Thank
you. What is that tranche that's called Grant Directs?
So Grant Directs are the other basic research grant funding that we get. And direct means it's the program work as opposed to indirects, which is more the overhead costs that support the institute from a general standpoint.
And the source of that is federal?
The National Institutes for Health, the Gates Foundation, the National Cancer Institute, organizations like that.
Yes. And the indirects from the university, source of funds of that is university, right?
Those are actually the indirects that the university uses to support its broader goals, and then the part that's the maroon color is the part that we get to use, which is we use to reinvest in these programs.
The indirects flow through the university, but
right,
they're also connected with the grants from the feds, that's the foundations, right, whoever gives the original grant.
Yeah. Well, we're proud of you. Thanks very, very much, and thanks for your patience, and looking forward to that vaccine, Doc. Thank you very, very much.
Could I just finish out by saying I think this has been a great investment for the people of Maryland and Governor and Comptroller, even in these very, very tough times. You can see that keeping on, continuing investing in research and education, in the growth industries has resulted not only in very great significant funds flowing to Maryland, but the health and indeed the very lives of hundreds of thousands of people. And I just thought this was a magnificent.
I heard to put a price tag on that, didn't I?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Treasurer Kopp. Okay, we now go to the Secretary's agenda.
Thank you. Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. This morning we have 9 items on the Secretary's agenda. There are 2 reports of emergency procurements, and we're prepared to respond to any questions you may have.
Questions on the Secretary's agenda? I don't have any questions on it. Anybody need to be heard on it? Okay. Treasurer moves approval, seconded by the Comptroller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. We move on now to program open space.
She has no items this morning, so we're going to go to Secretary Foster and the budget.
Department of Budget Management.
Governor, Madam Treasurer.
Congratulations, Lee. You were eloquent as usual in court here.
Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, good morning. There are 6 items on the Department of Budget Management's agenda for today. I'd like to withdraw item 2, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Item 2 will be returning, I assume.
We will be bringing it back at a later date.
Mr. Comptroller?
Yes, item 3S, Madam Secretary.
Yes. Item 3S is a contract for financial advisor in the area of public bond financing for housing projects, and Steve Silver from the Department of Housing and Community Development is here to answer any detailed questions you may have.
Great. I guess the question that I have is it's a $2.5 million contract for financial advisory services, and there's only one bidder.
Yep.
Why is that?
The housing finance arena that we work in is there's only a few financial advisors throughout the country that do consolidated cash flows and provide financial advisory services. In the past, I think the most we've ever had is 3. This time, we only had 1 successful bidder. We had another bidder that was disqualified because they didn't meet the minimum qualifications and they didn't do the MBE correctly, as well as changing our proposal. They only wanted to bid on part of it. So this is a firm that's qualified, is well-renowned in the area of housing finance, and they were the only one who bid this time. Yeah,
okay, so my information is they've done this for 11 years.
Yes.
Has there been an escalation in the contract price?
No. The last bid was in 2006. I mean, I think it's $2,500 more this bid than the one in 2006.
And was there competition then?
Yes, there was. And I believe they were the low bidder. There was one successful. There was one other firm that bid against that met all the qualifications, and they were lower. Kane Mitter, the awardee, was lower than them.
Okay. Well, I have 2 concerns here. Number one, I think this is, I listened to your explanation, but I don't think this is an area where we should accept sole bid proposals like this. I just can't imagine that in the financial services area there aren't other companies. My own staff went on Google and found several that were in this space. So it concerns me that there's no competition. My second concern is that, this is a significant amount of money, and most of the expertise in state government in this area is with the Treasurer. And not to put her on the spot, but it certainly strikes me that a lot of what you're looking for here could be done by her expert staff. I mean, this is basically cash flow analyses.
They're cash flow on housing revenue bonds, which are different than municipal revenue bonds. And we did send out the 22 firms to bid this. We did reach out to a lot of different firms. Once again, the housing municipal finance area is a very unique area in the world of finance, municipal finance. So I'm not saying there are not other firms out there. There are very few firms that do housing finance and do the cash flow.
Well, I just fall back on my earlier statement that particularly in these competitive times, I find it pretty extraordinary in this area, as specialized as it might be. And I'll obviously defer to the treasurer as to whether she's even interested in looking at this, but I hope that we could bring it in-house.
Could I just, we do not have on the treasurer's staff the competence, specific specialized competence to do this ourselves. It is very specialized. On the other hand, I do believe the treasurer's office has a legal responsibility to participate in the procurement of these services, and was not involved, and that surprises me very much.
Typically, because there was one bidder, we did not do the interviews or go through the process. Historically, we've always had a member of the Office of the Treasurer sit on our evaluation committee. And it's usually
I can't
a member.
Speak to that. All I know is what I read in the Constitution and the law.
Yes.
Do you want to rebid it?
I can't. We had no rule in it.
I'd be happy to rebid it.
What are we on here? 3S.
Item 3S.
Item
3S on the DBM agenda.
I am sure that the department requires such services. And requires them when they need them. I don't know anything about the timing, but I do have some question if it was done. I'm not saying it was done appropriately. All I'm saying is that I believe we ought to have been involved, and we're not.
Certainly when we look at this again, I mean, that is something we'll do it through the treasurer's office. I don't
in 2014.
Right. I mean,
sounds like we want to go back and redo this. So controller moves to what impact will this have if we don't have it?
Well, it'd have a major impact if we didn't have it. We can't go to do new bond issuance, new housing issuance without doing cash flows for the credit rating agencies. I would urge you not to take that action in the long term. Certainly, if we want to look at an
Are they already the person doing it?
Yes, they're already.
Why can't we just extend it for 6 months and then you're good to go, and then you can do a process properly, have the treasurer involved?
We could certainly.
Okay, what do we need to do to execute those 10 steps here?
You could either defer this item or you could disapprove this item with instructions.
What happens if it's deferred for 2 weeks?
Once upon a contract.
What happens? Senator Kennedy, I'm the procurement officer at the Department of Housing and Human Services.
What's the impact of deferring it till the next meeting?
Until the next meeting? The contract, current contract, doesn't expire until August 31st.
Good.
So this would be in effect until September 1st. We wouldn't have time to re-procure by then, but we could look into your concerns.
Give us time to discuss it.
Yeah, and in the meantime, we'd make... You guys can see what's on the flight path and figure out the proper way to do this, have the treasurer involved.
The next meeting is September 1st, 3 weeks. I'm sure you can do a bridge contract for a few days to get you to the September 1st meeting. And in that time,
the current contract runs through August 31st.
The controller moves to defer on the next meeting, seconded by the treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. The ayes have it. Any other items on the Department of Budget Management agenda? Okay. Treasurer moves approval, seconded by the controller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. The ayes have it. We move on now to the University System of Maryland.
Mr. Evans is here.
Joe Evans, representing the University System of Maryland. We have 8 items on the agenda today. Here to answer any questions.
Marketing and advertising services for the Robert H. Smith School of Business.
We call it Mr. Sterling's.
Good morning. Jim Sterling for the University of Maryland College Park.
Hi, Jim. What is this item?
7.
Item 7. I cannot find it in my book.
Page 14.
Gotcha. What do they do?
They do marketing and advertising for the Robert H. Smith School of Business at College Park. It's a contract that we awarded last year, and it's up for its first renewal option.
What do they do?
The marketing and advertising campaigns specifically targeted for programs run by the business school. As you know, they have the traditional MBA program, the executive MBA program. We have overseas operations, so they're involved in marketing and advertising for all of those programs. It's the creative effort to handle the media buy.
How do you assess their success? I mean, I know you believe they're successful. How do we know that?
Well, they just started a new campaign last year, so
right.
We're in the early stages of it. We actually, judging from the spend on this thing, didn't move it along as quickly as we expected. It only spent about $600,000 or $700,000 last year. I think we estimated about $1 million. So it's a new campaign. I'm not sure we're in a position to judge the final results of it yet. But
when you do. Seriously, when
right.
You judge the results, what are you going to be looking at? What are the indicators?
I'm sure they're looking at the intake, the enrollment.
Increasing enrollment, the enrollment from different places.
Absolutely. I mean, the success of attracting people to the executive MBA program, for example, would be one. The success in the stand-up and the expansion of our overseas operation would be another.
Controller?
Thank you, Governor, for flagging this, because I did notice that the option year, it's a 2-year contract, the second year is 50% more than the first year. How do you justify that?
Well, we had an estimated amount when we awarded the contract, and as I mentioned just a moment ago, we came up a little short in the first year. I think in the second year we'll probably spend a little more on the media buy, which is the main driver. There's probably $1 million or more in TV and print advertising associated with this. So it's going to fluctuate depending on the media buy. That's the main driver. I think just to add, when we awarded this, we estimated about $7.2 million over the life of the contract. With an estimated amount of a little over $1 million a year.
Well, I'm not sure why the governor brought this up, but I'm happy to defer to him on this matter as to.
I was just curious about it. I mean, I know it's.
I've heard that Mr. Salt can do about the spending. I mean, the patterns of spending. But I have to believe that at the School of Business, of all places, they must have rolled out some sort of plan and expectations and indicators of meeting a range of expectations. And perhaps that's not, perhaps you're not equipped with I can't believe there isn't something more.
I can certainly go back and get you more detail on that directly from the business.
And it is $1 million. It is very important to have good advertising. It's very important to have the right students, and then you make the right contacts in the market, and we're known internationally. I just think somehow that's got to be linked to this contract.
I'm sure it is. I can't give any more detail than I have, but happy to get you that as a follow-up.
This is just the first of the five renewal options, right?
That's correct.
So you'll be coming back. I just think it's ironic that the business school, which tells us how to run our businesses and government, doesn't have something a little more concrete.
I completely understand and be happy to go back and get that.
I can't think. State school or something? B-Stats. How about Smith-Stats? What is
Smith-Stats? I'll be happy to report that back to the board.
Okay, any other questions on the University System in Maryland agenda items? We'd like to know the outputs on this one. What your definition of success is going to be under this. All right, Treasurer moves approval, second by the Controller. All favor signify by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? Yes, Adam.
Thank you.
We move on now to the Department of Information and Technology. Shirley Schlanger.
Good afternoon, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. Elliot Schlanger, Department of Information Technology. This afternoon we have four items on our agenda, and we are prepared to answer any questions at this time.
Like one of those perennial candidates for office. Is the lottery here? Or are they representing Mr. Martino here? I'd actually like to praise Mr. Martino for providing my office with supporting information about this proposal. Maybe he could just come up and summarize what it is.
Good morning. Excuse me. Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, Stephen Martino, Director of the Maryland Lottery. Today we are requesting approval to purchase and or lease 750 slot machines for the Ocean Downs facility, which is slated to open the second half of December of this year.
As I said, thank you for providing my office, even though I obviously disagree with this thrust of these contracts. I really appreciate the fact that in a timely way you provided the purchase and lease and maintenance costs and everything was laid out. I do have a question about MBE participation, because I noticed that six of the eight approved vendors have met or exceeded the 25% target. One of them, frankly, achieved a 41% goal. But the largest single vendor and one other, I guess IGT, which will supply 320 of the 750 machines we're buying and leasing today, has achieved only a 15% goal. And they dragged the average MBE participation for the entire contract down to 20%. The question is that since six of the eight vendors have met their goals, frankly, in the face of claims that from many that they would not be able to meet them. They met them and did not ask for a waiver. Why are we, in effect, not recognizing those six vendors by saying to the other two, you've got to meet the 25% goal? What kind of message, I guess, are we sending to the six that achieved the goal if we're giving the other two a waiver?
We wish that all of the vendors had been at 25%. As you know, Mr. Comptroller, we have set an aggressive MBE goal for the slot procurement process at 25%. We have not achieved that, but we are working hard. Specifically, as it regards IGT, I would probably make a couple of points. One, we have reviewed, and I think we probably spoke about regarding the purchase in Cecil County, they have represented to us, and we are satisfied that all of their in-state spending, all of the spending within the state of Maryland, is being done by an MBE provider, subcontractor. That includes maintenance, warehousing, transportation, bonding. We are and do continue to urge IGT in particular to increase that goal. We are working with them to do that. I met with two executives of IGT yesterday to convey that message specifically. I can talk on one issue. We are working hard to get a potential MBE vendor certified with the state to provide locks, which I believe that IGT would then buy locks from to increase their participation. Ultimately, what we want to do is make sure that the facilities that were authorized by the law that passed in 2007 and approved by the referendum in 2008 are competitive and achieve what the people of the state of Maryland want them to. And we believe for them to generate the most revenue and produce the economic development that they hope that we hope that they will, that we need to have the most competitive games in those facilities. Maryland is in a hyper-competitive gaming environment, and that we believe that for that facility to be competitive, they need to have an appropriate slot mix, and including games from IGT would be part of an appropriate slot mix.
So you really decide, you're deciding to buy the IGE machines based on what the operators of the facility are telling you, or
is
that your own research, or what?
We receive a recommendation from the operator. So in this case, like we did in Cecil County with Hollywood, Penn National provided what they would like for their slot mix. Also, Ocean Downs did that as well. We look at it. We review it. We review it carefully. We talk to outside individuals who can provide us some impartial recommendations or points of view. But ultimately, as the law was constructed, the gaming expertise is coming from the operators, and that expertise is what we are drawing upon, and as both of them are experienced operators in other jurisdictions, to make sure we have an appropriate slot mix. And in this case, the operator felt that 320 IGT machines would help them generate the most revenue for the state.
I understand that. The only problem, as I've expressed, is that they didn't meet the MBE goal, and you are testifying today that you're meeting with them, and what are the chances in the future that they're going to meet the 25% goal?
I don't know what the chances are in the future that they'll meet at 25%, but I can tell you that we will continue to work with them and do what we can to make sure that they maximize the goal. And where we can be engaged on the state level to help them do that, we certainly will. And I can assure you that based on my conversations as late as 3 o'clock yesterday afternoon, they understand the importance of this 25% goal. I think the message has been received, and they assure us that they're doing everything they can to meet it.
And then just two quick questions. Who makes the decision to buy or to lease? Is that you or is that the manufacturer?
It's done at the lottery. Lottery staff do that.
Uh-huh. And the breakdown here is what?
592 are being purchased and 158 are being leased.
And then I see 750 of the 800 machines that are needed for Ocean Downs are being either purchased or leased. What about the remaining 50?
The operator has decided to initially open with 750 machines, which is 50 fewer than the complement it is authorized or is paid for. They want to see how things open. They want to see what the market demand is, and then perhaps recalibrate the floor, add machines that specifically would allow them to maximize revenue. But they will open with 750, and at some point in time in the future, I don't know when, but we'll work with them if they feel that an additional purchase or lease of 50 machines is justified.
Thank you, and Governor, I'm going to vote against this. It fails to meet the MBE goals, but I just have a general conceptual problem with the state of Maryland buying slot machines for facilities. I know the legislature thought that was the right direction to go in, but it certainly puts us in an awkward position, and we're certainly expending a lot more money right now than we're taking in, since we're taking in nothing. Yeah, but no other state does this kind of forward funding of these machines. Anyway, I've made my case. I'm going to vote no, and find it hard to all over the state, even supporters of slots, find it very difficult to understand these millions of dollars being paid out. And I take it, Madam Treasurer, we still don't know what the financing plan is going to be. You're still putting that up for review. But
is there anyone else that needs to be heard on this? Okay. Treasurer moves approval, seconded by Governor. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? Controller votes no. And the motion carries.
The rest of the IT agenda.
Okay. Now the rest of the IT agenda. Treasurer moves approval, seconded by the Controller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. We move on now to loss check.
Transportation.
Department of Transportation.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, Beverly Swain Staley representing Maryland Department of Transportation. We're presenting 16 items today, as items 2 and 15 have been previously withdrawn. For the record, items 5 and 16 have been previously submitted as revised items. Happy to answer your questions.
Any questions?
I see that the two major departments of transportation and general services don't sustain the, don't have the holding ability that some of the other departments. I'm sorry, I was having a little trouble hearing while everybody was talking.
See, Corridor City's Transitway, huh?
It caught my eye.
That's coming back after an examination. Yes, we have to sort out some FTA and issues with the AG's office.
Is that item 2?
Yes.
Yeah, no, I had a couple of questions on that. I know you're withdrawing that, Governor, if I could.
Sure.
Recognize that obviously is an item that caught my attention. I know it's being withdrawn and will be brought back, but I actually appreciate the fact, Madam Secretary, that you're withdrawing it, and rather than presenting us with something which we have to vote up or down on, I hope that you'll consider a couple of concerns. Obviously, many of us, myself included, support the Purple Line, and we want mass transit. But when I looked at this item and saw that we were talking about an 8-year commitment to a large number of consulting companies for $160 million to do the, analysis of these mass transit lines, it struck me that that was the exact amount that we cut from highway user revenue dollars for our state's local jurisdictions. And that, as you know, has gutted a lot of their local public works projects and prevented counties and towns from any kind of, frankly, real road repair or street improvement or sidewalk maintenance. And in addition to that, we read about our metro system, which, if you've ridden it recently, is really on its heels in the Washington area. It's got all sorts of deferred maintenance and problems in addition to what we read about in the paper. And the MARC system has obviously got some operational problems.
So those are being addressed by the new engines that are rolling off every week.
Excellent. But there are, a lot of activities underway, and my concern was that we were committing over 8 years $160 million to a very significant number of consultants. So when you go back and look at this again, I'd like you to see whether we can do something other than an 8-year agreement, because I believe that's too long a time period. Additionally, I hope that you will look at the management of the lead consultants, the sub-consultants, and the other sub-consultants. My staff has done a review of the project management, and they're very concerned about the ability of MTA to manage, in effect, just a caravan of consultants. And the concern from a management standpoint is that some of these consultants are approved on three or four different layers, and so how do you protect us from having Company A reviewing Company A's work product, I guess is the best way to put it. And then a related question is, on the general engineering term teams, how do we have that put together with the project management teams? And then there's just a lot of kind of vague and undefined scope of service that is in the various background materials. And things such as this contract will provide support for system preservation enhancements or expansions relative to all existing MTA modes as required. If you could look at those statements and make sure that we have as tight a definition of services envisioned from these consultants as possible, and you could let us know how many of the consultants are already under contract MTA and are providing some of these services already, and exactly how this is all going to have proper oversight.
As you've acknowledged, these represent work that will be done on the Red Line and the Purple Line, which are critically important projects that we are continuing to move forward with. We pulled the item because we do have I have questions when I saw the item with regard to the consultant, and frankly some confusion with the FTA just in terms of use of consultants. So that's why we're pulling the item, but we do anticipate bringing it back. We expect that this will be largely federal funds, obviously, as most New Starts projects are. But yes, I do share some of the concerns with regard to the management, and that's what I am going to address before I bring it back.
From the local perspective, they see potholes and us voting a lot of money for consultants. And I understand that it's federal money for these projects, but we got to make sure that we're not flying in the face of these locals that are right now. They can't fill a little pothole, much less a big one. And so I appreciate that you're taking it back. And as I said, I really am. Most of these contracts we look at are already baked and done, and we have to either vote up or down. So I appreciate the fact that you're going to be able to take another look at this.
Thank you.
Anything on the balance of the transportation agenda?
No. Not for me. Thank you.
Comptroller moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. We move on now to the Department of General Services.
Good afternoon, Governor. I'm Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. Department of General Services has 39 items on our agenda, including two supplementals. We have made minor revisions to items 1, 2, 6, 12, and 16. We are withdrawing items 14LL and 25CGL. And we'd be glad to answer any questions you have at this time on these items.
Tell me about the Woodmont chapter of the Isaac Walton League.
16. That item is being presented to you, to the board today, Governor, on behalf of the Department of Natural Resources. It's a final revision of a contract between this particular tenant, which is the Department of Natural Resources, and the users, the Woodmont Isaac League, and I'll call on DNR to talk about and answer any specific questions you might have.
I remember this one from the mid-90s, late 90s. Can you just tell us how there were budget, and many of us had concerns originally, having to do basically with exclusivity and with the history of some groups regarding minorities and women. Can you tell us what's happened?
Sure. Meredith Lasbury for the Department of Natural Resources. First, on the public access, some of the questions that were raised with the initial acquisition and also with this lease were whether the Department of Natural Resources had the ability to manage this very large property. When it first arose as an opportunity for acquisition, it was a tremendous opportunity because of the history of the lodge, because of the large acreage of the property and its connection to other protected lands. So the department went about seeking a partnership with Isaac Walton League to assist with the management. The lodge in particular was very difficult, I think, for the Department of Capital because of its historic nature. So what's been developed is, at that time, and you see in the current lease that's continued.
Meredith, point that thing at your
mouth.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Is that better?
And then they'll be able to turn it down and won't have it. Okay. Keep going.
So the current lease, what it does is it provides there's a small amount of acreage of the huge property. It's 400 acres that is very well managed by the Isaac Walton League and the lodge. We've split it out so that during the months of April through September, the Department of Natural Resources and the general public has access to the entire 3,400-acre property. The 1,400 acres that the Isaac Walton League manages, that area has their more exclusive use during the September to April. And so during that period of time, their membership is very involved with the use of that property, but the Department of Natural Resources continues to have access to it. Now, there are a lot of public programs, education, the Women Outdoors program happens every year at the Woodmont Lodge. There's a partnership with the Turkey Federation to do hunting education for children. So there's a whole range of public uses that really bring the property to much wider use of the public.
Is there not a bike path or something that's being planned for up there?
Yes. It's adjacent to the C&O Canal, so you have that. It also connects the Western Maryland rail trail. And in addition, the department recently got a $20,000 federal grant to establish to mark an existing hiking trail through the property that is accessible to the public year-round.
Gotcha.
And how does the public know about it?
There's information on DNR's website, and any member of the public can call Fort Frederick State Park to gain access to the portions of the property that are managed by the Isaac Walton League. And all of the events that take place at Woodmont are also advertised on the Fort Frederick State Park section of the website. There's an open house coming up on September 11th. There are two open houses a year, one in May and one in September, typically.
This property is well known to people in Washington County and has been for some time, right?
That's right. The community in Washington County is very, very interested in this property. They're very interested in the hunting opportunities there and its continued public use. And Treasurer, you've asked about some of the issues in the past related to the exclusivity of the Isaac Walton League and who has access to their club. And I did speak with Mark Keener, who's the president of the local chapter there, and we discussed this issue specifically. They have a 27-member board. A lot of their members are small businesses and local businesses. And their membership works very hard to bring friends and family and members of the local community from all walks of life to visit the property.
Would it be possible... I have no reason to doubt anything. Would it be possible for you to furnish our office with a brief statement from you and from the Isaac Walton League regarding what's happened in the last 10 years in terms of both access and use by women and racial minorities?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We also have a use plan that was developed by the department in 2008 that outlines the specific public uses throughout the year, and that is an agreement that we refer to.
But not only what's in writing, but what in fact has taken place on the ground.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else on the Department of General Services agenda items? Controller moves approval. Second by the treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Ayes have it. That concludes our meeting. Thank you all very much. Thank you, Controller.
You're welcome.
See you.